There. Today is October 8th, 2022. It's Saturday. This is a Grand Canyon Oral History Interview Part 1 with Andy McLeroy. Andy spells his last name McLeroy. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Andy. How are you today?
I am doing good.
Great. Andy, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, you can.
Thank you very much. Andy, what year were you born?
I was born in 1962.
Where were you born?
I was born in Henrietta, Texas.
What were your folks doing there?
My mom was a school teacher, and I don't quite remember what Dad was doing.
Okay. All right.
At that time.
Did you grow up there in Henrietta?
No, I lived there about 3 years, and then we moved to Fort Worth, Texas.
Okay. Is that where you then went to school?
Yeah, that's where I more or less grew up.
Okay.
Fort Worth.
Did you guys go on vacations in the summertime? What was your upbringing like?
It was good. Well, it was really great, I guess.
Cool.
I remember a trip we took to Colorado up in the mountains, and we had an old 1967 Super Sport and Chevrolet. And,
yeah.
And was pulling our trailer.
Oh, my.
A little small trailer, probably 20 foot long.
Okay.
And we spent a week up there. We did that, and then we came to 1 year. We went to the Smoky Mountains.
Oh my!
In Tennessee here.
Okay.
And that was fun. Yeah, we usually Mom was off in summer, so
right.
We usually took trips because she was a school teacher, so she was off, and we took vacations in.
Nice. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I got one brother that's about 5 years older than me.
Okay. All right.
And he's retired now.
Okay. And did your dad find work in Fort Worth?
Yeah, he became a sheet metal worker.
Okay.
And he worked jobs. Out on jobs, and then closer to his retirement, they put him in the shop.
Okay.
And let him work in the shop.
All right. Was it through your dad that you got introduced to metalworking and ironworking?
No. That was a good friend of mine that we grew up since second grade that got me. He was already a friend of his, got him into operating engineers. And then he told me, said, you need to go sign up. So I didn't have nothing to do, so I went and signed up.
Okay, hang on a second. I got a whole bunch of questions. Let's back up a little bit. When you were in high school, your second to last year, your last year, your junior and senior years, what were you, this would have been, let me work out the math here, 62, 72, 76?
I graduated in 80.
Okay, 1980. What were you thinking to do after graduation? What were you thinking you were going to do?
I didn't know.
Okay.
I didn't know. I was scared. When I graduated, I was scared because I couldn't go back to school.
Right.
I didn't know what to do. I was lost.
Okay.
But I could weld a little bit because Dad kind of taught me to weld at the house.
Okay.
So I was going to join the iron workers, but I didn't get hired because they hired about 80 people that time, and I didn't get hired. So I talked to my friend that we grew up with.
What was your friend's name?
Chris Hardy.
Okay.
he said, go to the operators and sign up.
Now, so, what is the operators?
It's the operating engineers.
Okay.
It's a union.
All right.
For cranes or dirt work or run dirt equipment or cranes or about it, I guess.
Okay. And did they have like an apprenticeship program?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I got in the apprenticeship program.
All right.
It was only 3 years.
All right. When did you get into the apprentice program? Was that in the summer of 1980?
82. Well, really 81.
Okay.
And a half.
Okay. So be kind of in the fall of 81?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And what was that like? Did you send them a letter? Did you walk in and say, hi, I'd like to go in your apprentice program? How did that work out?
That's what I did. He told me where the union hall was, and I'd walked in and said I would like to join. And they said, okay, we'll take applications.
Okay.
So about a month later, I believe it is, that they called me and wanted me to come in or go down to the apprenticeship school and sign up.
Where was the school?
It was another little small town right outside of Fort Worth, which it wasn't probably 30 minutes from my house.
Okay.
That I was living in.
All right.
I'm trying to think of the name of it. It might have been Lake Worth, but I don't think it was. It's between Saginaw and Lake Worth.
Okay. And how did the apprenticeship program work? What was some of the first things they had you doing?
Well, you'd go to apprenticeship school on Saturdays.
Okay.
8 hours. And then they would, most of our equipment we had came from the military.
Okay.
And so you usually, like the first year we had to work, we done book stuff because they was trying to teach us dirt equipment like elevations, them sticks that you stick in the ground.
Yeah, the red tops and the survey stuff.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they write numbers. They try to teach us that.
Okay.
And then you got into the cranes, which if we started running equipment, usually we had to work on them to get them started.
Ah.
And then once they got started, then you could work them. And that usually took about 8 hours right there.
Okay. What were you doing in the week, during the week, between your Saturdays?
I would go down to the union hall.
Okay.
And wait on a phone call.
Okay.
To see if they needed an oiler to go out. So it might be one time I might get a day job. Then one time you might get a 2-day job or a week job. And it was pretty rough. I about starved to death.
Okay.
The first year.
Okay. What kind of jobs were you doing?
I was an oiler. What they call it, an oiler. And I would do whatever the operator needed me to do, but like first things in the mornings, I would go up there and clean his windows with rags and Windex and stuff. And during the day, I would hand out chokers for the iron workers, they say they need a couple of 3/8 or inch or half inch chokers. So okay. I'd already have them wrapped up and nicely neat, and I'd hand them that. And then when they got done with it, I'd go get them and wrap them back up and put them back in their little storage area.
Okay. So you were basically an assistant to the crane operator.
Right.
Okay. And cleaning windows, inside the cab, I'm assuming you're one story, two story, 10 stories high.
But no, I was only 20 foot high. It's usually a truck crane.
Oh, okay. All right.
That they drive down the road.
Got it.
So they're not very tall.
Sure. And so getting to the outside windows would be a whole lot easier.
Yeah. And okay. The second year, I got a big job down in Jewett, Texas, working on a new powerhouse down there. And I got the oil on a bigger crane. It's a 250-ton crane. And I stayed there for about a year and a half. And that operator, his name was Dan. I can't remember his last name. But he was from Oregon.
Okay.
And I oiled for him. I would keep the crane clean, do his windows and all that. Well, he started letting me have some seat time.
Nice.
Get in it and run the block up and down. And then I got to start picking stuff.
So hang on a second. Let's back up a bit.
Cool.
How do you spell Jewett? Do you know?
J-E-W-I-T-T.
Thank you. And this 250-ton crane, was it rubber tire mounted or was it track mounted? How was it?
No, it was on tracks.
Okay. Was it your first time around a track crane?
Yes, and especially that big one.
Okay. Can you describe to me how big that crane was? Because I have no understanding at all.
When I first seen it, I thought that thing was humongous. It was big. But
like as big as a barn or big as a house?
No, about as big as a barn. It was probably 30 foot tall, 25 foot tall, somewhere in there, and about 30 foot wide. I'm just describing the house and the tracks.
Right.
And probably 40 foot long.
Okay, I mean this is big. This is house size here. And what kind of boom did it have on it? How long was the boom? How high?
I'm thinking we had about 240 foot of boom.
Wow.
With 40 foot of jib.
Okay, now can you explain to me the difference between boom and jib?
Well, your boom is the biggest. It comes right up, right down from the house, right where you're at, all the way up to the point section.
Okay.
That your block comes off of.
Where the pulleys and are, then, where the cable goes over and then back down again? Okay.
Yeah. And then you got a little extension up there that's real small. And measure it, and it was 40 foot long.
Okay.
And it run a single line come down it with a ball for speed purposes. You know, you can't pick as much, but
right.
It's faster.
Okay, so help me understand this. In this 250-ton crane, you have a big tower, and on the top of that tower is a smaller little tower. And the big tower would do heavy loads, but it would be closer to the house, the bottom of the crane.
Right.
And the lighter loads would be a little further away. Why would they be faster than lifting from the main boom?
Well, from the main boom, you would run, say, a four-part line.
Oh.
And you got a big block, which your upper jib would have a single line.
Okay.
So your single is going to be faster than your four-part.
Right, because you got to pull. You got to pull a lot more cable if it goes up and down and up and down.
Right.
Than if it just goes up once and down once.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. So that's what makes it faster, but you can't lift as much weight. Okay, got it.
Right.
All right.
I think it was good. The single part line was good for like 30,000.
Okay.
I think.
And what was the four part?
We were setting four part where you do 30 times four.
30 times four.
Be 120.
120,000.
But with all the boom you got in it, you might not get only 100,000, maybe.
How does that work?
Something like that.
Why is it less?
Well, you got a lot of boom. We had 240 foot of boom.
Oh, so you got to include.
If you shorten the boom up, yes, you definitely get 120,000, definitely.
So you have to include the weight of the boom in what you're lifting?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
And the parts aligned. You want more parts aligned than what you're picking, so it's not as hard on the crane picking it.
Okay. I don't quite follow you there. Meaning if the boom is more straight up and down versus leaning way out?
Yes, that's definitely a weaker point.
Yep.
It may have, you know, I don't remember. It may have picked 120,000 when it was boom straight up.
Okay.
But I don't remember.
And would this be something that the operator, that Dan, would have to be aware of as he's looking at the people on the ground saying, okay, pick this up and put it over there. He's got to kind of size up what it weighs and how he's going to do that?
Yeah. For me, I kind of run through my head what I got to do and how we're going to do it. But I listen to them. Hmm. Telling me where they want it, and then I tell them this is how we're going to do it, and they usually say, okay.
All right. Okay, let's go back to that first job. You were there a year and a half doing a powerhouse. How many stories high was that powerhouse?
That was probably over the top. It was probably 160 foot or so.
Okay.
Something like that. We was working in the bag house, or not the bag house. We was working in the precipitator part.
Okay.
We had to pick these frames up, that come in on a truck. They would be laying down. We'd have to two-line them, use the whip, which is off the jib, and then the main load.
Oh, wow.
And we had to stand them up, swing them over to where they could secure the frame, and then use the block, which is the four-part line, and pick them out of the rack, pick them up there and set them down inside, and it's all by radio.
Woo.
They radio you.
Okay. So did you start doing this under Dan's supervision?
I think I did. I think I done once or twice.
Okay.
No, I never set none in there, but I did pick them up off the truck and stand them up and lean them up, set them down against that frame where they could secure them.
Okay.
I did do that.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was really fun.
So I'm assuming that Dan was seeing your interest and, you know, was like, well, you can do more than just clean the windows and you know.
Yeah, we got along real good.
Nice. And is that normally how that apprenticeship kind of works?
Supposed to.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But you don't always get good operators.
And you don't always make friends with them and, yeah.
Right.
That will give you seat time.
Will help you.
Yeah. You bet. You bet. Nice.
He was like 6'2", and I'm like 5'10", so the seat was always too high for me
okay.
to reach the pedals, so I'd always have to lower the seat so I could reach the pedals, because that's your brake pedals, and we always laughed about that.
Huh. Can you go over the controls for me? You mentioned brake pedals, and I'm like, wait, what? Can you go over those?
This is a friction crane. Back in the 80s, well, they might still have a few now, but not many. But this is all when you've got the control lever to hoist, you've got a brake for that side. Usually you got two brakes in the floor, one for the load line and one for the whip line. So if you're going up with the load line, you have that brake loose, and then when you get ready to stop, you lock the brake.
Okay.
And you kick your lever out to neutral.
Okay.
And the brake is holding the load.
Okay.
And that's the older days. Nowadays, everything's hydraulic, so you don't really have foot brakes no more.
Ah.
So, unless you get into one of them older ones.
Right, so these would be actual band brakes on the drums.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Band.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So you'd have you kind of have an up or a down control with the lever, and then when you got it where you wanted it, you would kick in the brake and lock it in place.
Right.
And all that would be happening over the radio. If you couldn't see where the actual end of your cable was, somebody would be talking to you on the radio?
Yes. Even this crane that when I was on the Marble Canyon Bridge or Navajo Bridge, it was that same way.
Okay.
It had foot brakes.
Oh. Okay. So it was one of these friction cranes.
Yes.
All right. And that was 94. So the hydraulic cranes, did they...
They more or less come out around 98.
Okay.
And above.
Huh. Interesting. All right.
Yeah.
And you were on that job at working on that powerhouse for a year to a year and a half?
I think it was around a year.
Uh-huh. Okay. And would you go back to Fort Worth then on weekends?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If we wasn't working.
Okay.
I think the first 3 months, I think I lived in a motel. And then Dad helped me get a trailer.
Okay.
Travel trailer.
Ah.
And so we bought a little travel trailer, and I took down there, and I lived in a travel trailer then, which was cheaper.
Yeah.
And then I started making a little bit of money.
What were you making as an oiler back then in where are, what year, let's see, 83, is that right?
Yeah. I was about 82.
Okay.
Well, yeah, 83. Yeah, you're right. I think I started out at like $8 in 82. I started out at $8.65. And every 6 months, we would get a raise, 5%.
Okay.
From the operator scale. So I really don't know what they were making, $18
in 1983. That was pretty good money.
Yeah. I was about 75 or 80% in the scale range, Jim.
Okay. For an oiler in the 83.
Yeah, for an oiler.
Okay. All right. And then would you have to run back to that little town outside Fort Worth on a Saturday, every Saturday, to keep your apprenticeship going?
If I wasn't working.
Oh.
On a Saturday.
Okay.
If I worked Saturday, I didn't have to show up.
Okay.
But I had to bring them the next week or whatever. Whenever I went back, I'd have to show them a check stub.
Okay.
That I worked.
That's a good deal, because if you're not working, they can keep working on the didactic stuff in the classroom. But if you are working, then you're getting on a job training, and that would be exactly
right.
What they'd want.
Right. The first 6 months, I didn't work much at all, because I didn't know nobody.
Okay.
Most of these guys that come in, their dads are already operators or something, and so they've already got work.
Okay.
Because I didn't know nobody except for a friend of mine, but he was an oiler too, so I couldn't get no work from him. But
right.
I about starved to death that first 6 months.
Okay.
They said I had a bad attitude, and I said, well, you would too if you ain't working. But then everything started picking up and started making a good living out of it.
Okay. Where did you go after that year-long job on the powerhouse with Dan?
I think I may have done some work around Fort Worth, different companies.
Still oiling?
Yeah. I finally got on with Durr Construction.
How do you spell that?
D-E-R-R.
Okay. Where are they
at?
They're
out of Euless, Texas, which is in between Dallas, Fort Worth.
E-U-L-I-S?
E-U... E-L, no, E-U, yeah, E-U-L-E-S-S, yeah.
Okay, Euless, Texas, all right.
And I worked with them a bunch.
What were you doing for them?
Well, I was finishing up my oiling, and then they put me into crane operating, hanging iron for buildings.
Okay.
And worked for them quite a bit. I finally got in, and they liked me and kept me busy.
What kind of stuff were you doing for them?
My first job with them as an operator, I run an 82-ton crane. It's kind of weird. They run the cable. I had short boom, only 100 foot or something. But they run a cable that come out of the boom. They run it down inside the building. It's a little one-story building.
Okay.
Short, and run some snatch blocks, which is just another shiv.
Yep.
They had tied off and run couple of snatch blocks, and I was picking up these concrete panels to where they needed it, to where they could weld them off, because that was the only way you could get to it. And I thought that was really weird. I've never seen nothing like that.
Okay. So I'm thinking that your cable comes down off of the pulley at the end of
the
boom, down to another pulley where it might go into the building.
It's already going into the building then.
Another pulley where it would go down to the thing you needed to pick up.
Right.
Wow. So that way they wouldn't have to tear the roof off the whole place.
Right.
But they could still lift something really heavy inside. But you're in the dark, meaning
sitting in the crane doing nothing.
Listening to...
waiting on somebody to flag me.
Or to tell you something on the radio.
Well, then I didn't have a radio. I had to look up. My flagman would be standing on top of the building. He'd tell me what to do.
So what kind of flag signals would he give you, and how would that work?
There's a standard hand signal by OSHA.
Okay.
That either you hold your hand up and squeeze your fingers and thumb together, it means come up, or turn your hand down and squeeze your hands together with your thumb, that means come down. So, it's just, you kind of learn from the guys that you're working with.
Got it. And this guy would be maybe 20 feet away?
Yeah.
Was he watching somebody else giving him signals, or was he actually seeing what was?
I guess he was.
Okay.
And we done a big job in Plano, Texas, and that was for Ross Perot.
Okay.
I'm sure you heard of
it. Yeah, he ran for president.
Yeah.
What was that job all about?
It was called EDS, and I don't know what it stands for. But it was one of his buildings. It's like more or less an office building, I guess. It had like 5 floors.
All right.
Yeah, that was a really good job for me, learning, and it was a lot of iron. A lot of iron.
Nice.
Heavy iron.
So, again, I think about cranes, a lot of construction cranes. I just think about their tower cranes. You know, they're bolted to the ground kind of thing. Was that a tower crane job, or was that actually a track or a rubber-tired crane job?
It was a track.
Okay.
Track crane. It was American. It was the number of it was a 9299, which is... 165-ton crane.
Okay, so we're not up to the size of crane that you were working with Dan, the 250,000, but 250-ton crane, but we're getting bigger than the rubber tired.
I gradually got a little bigger in time. I gradually got bigger in time.
Okay. yep. So it's happening. And this was 94, roughly?
No, that was back in around 87.
I'm sorry, 87. All right.
87, somewhere in there, 88.
All right.
87.
And was this still with Durr?
Yeah.
Okay. How long were you on that job?
That job, I was probably there 8 months, probably. We had, I think we only had 2 cranes that were the same size on that building.
So sort of on different halves of the job site?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that way they would have two erecting crews, two raising gangs, two bolt-up crews, and they would be able to run those back and forth for the entire structure as it went up.
Yeah.
Okay.
My buddy that I grew up with, Chris, he was on the other crane.
Oh, wow.
And I was on mine.
That's cool. So was he working for Durr as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he'd worked there probably a year before I did.
Okay. All right, so this has given you pretty good experience with certainly the American track crane. How high, you mentioned five floors. Okay, so that's 50, 60 feet, something like that.
Yeah.
And was that a radio job or a hand signal job?
No, it was radio.
Okay. And so you're working with, at this point, you must have had your own oiler.
We didn't really have one then.
Okay.
For this company.
Okay. And then instead of having somebody, 20 feet away giving you hand signals, now you're running blind again. You can kind of see what's going on. At least it's up there somewhere, but it's a radio deal.
Yeah.
What kind of radio language did you use?
Oh, swing left, swing right, boom down, boom up, cable down, cut loose. That means when you cable down and they get it set, they stick their bolt holes in both ends, or bolts in both ends, then they'll say cut loose, so you just drop it down about a foot. They'll cut the choker loose, and then they say you're clear, and you take off and head back to the ground.
Okay. Which means you'd run it up, clear the site, turn, drop it back down, and pick up the next load.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. One thing I wanted to ask you about when you're running something like the American 9299, what are you thinking about when it comes to lightning?
Right now I give it about 10 miles. I'll look on my telephone and see how bad the lightning is. If it's a lot, I keep an eye out. When I see it, I'll check my phone. If it's like 10 miles, I'll usually shut it down around there and tell everybody to get away from the crane.
What did you do back in 87 before all the Smarty Pants phones showed up?
You just do whatever the foreman said.
Okay, so that was something, that was a foreman's responsibility then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I work a foreman. He would tell everybody to get off the building or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
To shut down.
Okay.
Lightning's close.
And what about wind?
I'm good with the wind if they can handle the load.
Okay.
If that gets to where they can't handle it, then I'll take it away from them. I'll let them know by radio. I'll say, all right, I'm going up, coming back to the ground.
Okay.
And the others say, they'll either say yay or nay. But usually I hadn't had too bad of a wind. They've always usually handled it.
I would imagine that with bigger cranes.
If you got a sign or something like a bundle of plywood.
Right.
That's a little rough.
Yeah.
You know, if it gets pretty wild up there, I'll bring it back to the ground. I don't care what they say.
Okay. But if you've got some giant thing that weighs many, many tons, the wind probably doesn't sound like it's that much of a factor.
Right. It's not that bad.
Okay.
Because it's so heavy.
Okay. What other environmental factors trouble you that I'm not thinking of?
mainly wind, rain, and lightning.
Okay.
Is the three major.
And that's going to be, you know, it's not just the crane that's going to be struggling in the rain. It's going to be all the iron workers are going to be struggling too.
Yeah, me seeing them.
All right. Yeah. And so that sounds like that's another foreman's job to call that.
Yeah, usually the iron workers don't like to get wet, so
right.
If it starts raining, they're coming down.
Oh, bam.
They're going to get out of it.
Yeah, because all the surfaces start getting slippery and they're up there hanging out on
yeah.
stuff.
If it's going to be here the rest of the day, usually they'll shut us down, go home.
Okay. All right. So what came after 87?
Done some jobs around Fort Worth. I had one job that I met David Mesh was in. It was for Durr.
Okay.
That may have been 92. We worked at a powerhouse in Cumberland City, Tennessee, which is up above, well, it's west of Clarksville, which is above Nashville. Clarksville's on the edge of Kentucky and Tennessee.
Okay.
I met David Mesh there. He was an ironworker foreman, a raising gang foreman. And his operator, I don't know, something, he quit or something, so we kind of got caught up on our side of the building, so I had to go over and run that crane, and David was there, and I may run it a week, maybe, and then I went back to my side with my crane, and I think they hired somebody else or somebody come in and filled in for me. They finished their side. And I don't know how David got my phone number, but after we got finished there, I went back to Texas, back home. Well, I was living in my dad's place because he had passed away.
Okay.
So I was living with in Dad's house on the farm, and David called me, asked me if I wanted to come to Arizona to do that bridge over the Grand Canyon, and I said, well, he said, well, it's good work, you're guaranteed 40 hours, so-and-so amount of money. And I said, okay, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so let's hang on a second. First thing I want to do is spell David's last name, which is M-E-C-H-E, David Mesh. And he's a...
Is it S-E or C-E or S-H?
I think it's C-H-E, M-E-C-H-E. And it's pronounced Mesh. M-E-S-H, as a normal spelling might be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, seemed like a nice guy.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't have been working for Durr.
No, he wasn't working for Durr. He got laid off from Durr on that Cumberland City job. And I don't know. And then I guess he went to work with Trailer Brothers.
Right.
And I guess somebody from Trailer Brothers knew him and asked him to come out there. So, I don't know how long. They might have been out there a month before I got out there.
Okay. And I'm going to back up a little bit. Did you know of Ed Kent, K-E-N-T? Did you know of Ed Kent at the time?
No.
Okay.
And, I had done a little bit of work with Beasley in been, was it, no, it wasn't Beasley then, it was, I forget their name.
Was it Kramer?
No, Beasley, the, one of the, one of the guys that was working for Beasley, he bought the company out.
Right.
I can't remember the name.
I think Ronnie Mack ran that through me, what happened to Beasley and how they kind of crashed.
Yeah, I don't know how. I the only time I worked with them, which it wasn't Beasley, it was that other company. I worked with them in 2000.
Oh, okay.
Year 2000.
Okay.
I kind of jumped ahead there.
That's all right. And then I know when I think Beasley got kind of went down, but then came back up again. I'm not sure. But I know that a lot of people had left Beasley and were working for Trailer Brothers
right.
back in 93, 94.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember our superintendent's name that was in the office, but I can't remember his name right offhand.
Okay.
He was the head superintendent. He didn't stay out at our job. He'd just show up every now and then.
Okay. This is when you were working for
Trailer Brothers.
For Trailers at Grand Canyon or before
yeah.
before then?
No, at the Grand Canyon.
Oh, okay. Huh. Would he have worked for Kramer or was he a Trailer Brothers guy?
He was working for Beasley.
Oh.
I don't know who Kramer is.
Kramer had the build job and they subcontracted that to Trailer.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know how all that went.
Yeah, okay.
But everybody from Beasley went to Trailer Brothers.
Right.
That I know of.
Right. Okay. So
because somehow or another, Trailer Brothers was a road building company, and they built like concrete bridges or something for the road.
Okay.
But they had never done a big job like this. Trailer Brothers hasn't.
Really?
They used all the people from Beasley went. They hired all people from Beasley to do this bridge. Because I guess Beasley is pretty used to doing stuff like this.
Right.
And I never worked for Beasley before. I knew they I think their office was in Dallas.
I think that's
somewhere
right.
Around Dallas.
Yeah,
somewhere.
I think that's right.
That was their main headquarters. And I think they had another company or another office in Memphis or Virginia, somewhere Beasley did. But I'm not real sure on that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not either. But I know that they had basically folded or something, a whole bunch of people quit.
Yeah, I don't know.
And
don't know what happened.
Yeah, as you say, a lot of them went
to Trailer Brothers.
Went to Trailer.
The higher people did.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they would pull people out of Beasley that were good and hire them for Trailer Brothers to do this bridge.
Right. So David calls you. This mm-hmm. must was this spring of 94?
I'm kind of thinking it was in the springtime. I was thinking when was it finished? In 94?
Same year it was started, yeah.
Because I was there for 6 months.
Yep.
So.
And you started on one end and finished on the outside far end of the other end. That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. 6 month bill, that was done.
So So I'm I'm guessing early spring I started.
Okay.
I can remember it got pretty warm out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we had a few what do y'all call them? Rain?
Monsoon
yeah,
storms?
Yeah, we had a few monsoons there. And I remember a lot of vacationers.
Lots of tourists.
Tourists would drive by and then they would stop on the side of the road and sit there and watch us.
Cool.
Working on the bridge.
Cool. You know, we've been talking here a little over 50 minutes, and I'm about to ask you a whole bunch of other questions about that Marble Canyon build.
Let me go to the restroom real quick.
You know what, Andy? I'm wondering if we can put a comma in this whole interview here. Call this good, and then we'll come back at it on another date and pick it up again.
Yeah, we can do it tomorrow.
Yeah, let's do that. Hang on a second.
Tomorrow afternoon.
What I've just talked with you about here, all the stuff we've gone through, is there anything else you want to add to that we didn't talk about? You know, bringing you up to 1993 and the jobs that you had before then.
Give me a minute to think.
Okay.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't guess I know anything. Back then, I was just doing the best I could to learn and try to make money.
Right. And by 94, you'd been 12 years in the game.
Yeah.
And so.
And it was picking up.
Okay.
Money was.
All right. The last question I want to ask you then on that. Well, I'll hold that for next time.
Okay.
All right. Let's go ahead and we'll conclude here part one of a Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Andy McLeroy. Today is Saturday, October 8th, 2022. My name is Tom Martin, and Andy, thank you so very much.
You're very welcome, Tom.